TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. Okay, go! Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those listening live at www.tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A very rainy Saturday, but we're pleased to welcome you for the next 3 hours. We have a jam-packed lineup. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson is going to join us. A little bit later on, at the top of the next hour, Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette. And then at the top of the last hour, Martin Cash from the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my usual colleague, Richard Pollock. And we have replaced Ezra for today's program, and depending on how it goes, maybe permanently, Gabe Desjardins from BehindTheNet.ca. Gabe, welcome back to Winnipeg.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad you guys picked up my flight yet again.
Yeah, no problem.
I wish we could do it more often than once a year, though.
Well, you know, the budget only has so many flights involved with it. That's the problem there. Ezra is away today. He's currently participating in a dragon boat race.
That's not necessarily true. We heard the race was actually at 11, so we don't really know where he is right now.
Well, and theoretically, we don't know that he actually participated.
That's true also.
I assume, yeah, he was the anchor or something.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, right before the, you know, last night, he messaged Remus that he wanted to go because Remus was going to go down and interview him.
Yeah.
You know, well, we couldn't arrange for the mic to be there. But as he, said to Remus at 2:54 a.m., meet you for coffee at 9. He texted Remus this morning, 9:45 a.m., hey, Remus, just woke up.
So anytime Ezzy's up till close to 3 a.m., it's a 50-50 proposition if he's going to make the show or not.
Yes. He might not have even been here.
Yeah. So we're not sure where he is. Apparently there was a dragon boat race maybe involved. I mean, we're not sure. We'll maybe try and catch up with him throughout the rest of the show, but we'll see how that goes. Best way to get a hold of us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is via Twitter. Send us your comments at Illegal Curve. You can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, let's get started with the Stanley Cup Finals. They are still ongoing. It seems as though they've really been the never-ending Stanley Cup Finals, despite this only being Game 5. The length of time that it's been dragged out has really hindered the quality of hockey and the flow to the series, I would say.
The oddest part about that, Drew, is that sometimes there's, you know, they started on Wednesday, Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, right?
Yeah,
but the problem is, you'd think that they'd have. I know they're obviously trying to make accommodate NBC, but you generally think, based upon the fact that there's 6 hours of flight time between these, between New Jersey and LA, that the 3 days off would be when they're traveling. Hasn't necessarily been the case.
Well, it hasn't been the case. It wasn't the case after Game 1. Between Game 1 and Game 2, that was their problem. I mean, the truth of the matter is, and we'll talk about the actual...
So it doesn't really make any sense that way, right?
Between Games 4 and 5, they had to travel, so
right.
It was okay getting
yeah.
the extra day there.
Sure.
But they should have started the series on Tuesday. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday,
right,
and then just go every second day for, at that point.
And the problem with that was they said, well, you know, we scheduled it for Wednesday because if the Rangers beat the Devils, they were going to play on Monday. But the Rangers didn't beat the Devils, so just make it on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, they set the schedule so far in advance now for, I guess, TV purposes. But, I mean, as the TV ratings have shown, nobody's watching the series. Let's start with that before we get into the game action. I'm going to flip things around. Why do you think this series hasn't captured the public's attention whatsoever?
Well, there hasn't been one game where both teams scored two goals.
So you think it's simply a matter of goal scoring?
Well, I mean, and if 2-1, 2-1, 4-0, 3-1, I mean, there hasn't been a game that's been, you know, crazy...
Well, two of the games were overtime games.
I realize, but a crazy back-and-forth 4-3, 5-4 overtime game. You know, maybe once a series you'll get that, it'll get people interested, and they'll tune in the middle of the game. And also, I mean, New Jersey... LA has that name cachet, but New Jersey has no cachet in terms of... Yeah, name value.
Do you think the hockey has been poor in this series?
No, not at all. I mean, I guess I'm a hardcore fan, so I had no problem watching every single game. It's not clear to me why this hasn't captured people's attention, but I think it's a good series and it's good hockey.
What you have with LA, I mean, you have name, you have players. Like, you have Parise, Kovalchuk, Kopitar, and you have Richards, and you have Quick, and you have Berger. So there's that name value, which in terms of the players themselves. But New Jersey doesn't attract a big audience. I know they're part of that New York metropolitan area, and that's talked about. Bruce Dalbec and talked about in the Globe this week. But it's not the Rangers. And so when you're not really the Rangers, you're not going to get that big of a draw. And if they're not drawing that many people during the season, they're not suddenly going to have crazy TV ratings. Now, LA will have will do a big rating. But at the same time, I mean, I think people... I think also, Drew, it's a product of people maybe tuning out a little bit before that. Like the quality of hockey, we're not criticizing the quality of hockey because it's good quality of hockey, but we're not talking about the hardcore fan for ratings here. We're talking about the casual fan.
Right.
And when you have a conference final of LA and Phoenix, the casual fan doesn't care. And so if they don't get involved in the series before, are they suddenly going to come back, or do they continue to fade away and do other things?
So this is more just the Phoenix problem, that Phoenix is essentially getting rid of fans everywhere.
It just sucks the life out of everything.
I mean, but think about that in terms of the series that you've had, right? You had Phoenix, playing LA in the conference finals.
Yeah.
Didn't really draw a huge audience.
Well, they're not two teams.
But LA St. Louis, I mean, don't get me wrong, the quality of the players is very good, but LA St. Louis, is that drawing a crazy TV audience?
No.
So I think people have started to, they kind of tuned out and have continued to tune out.
Do you think that sort of, there seems to be the perception that there's a lack of hate involved? You know, last year, Boston and Vancouver, there was a lot of hate there. People hated Vancouver.
That's New Jersey's strategy. They don't want anybody to, they don't want to engage anybody in that.
They just lull everybody to sleep almost?
That's one of the reasons they beat Philly. They didn't even acknowledge them on the ice.
So you're saying that really what's missing here is like some gross superhero villain from the 70s, and that would make a series?
Well, it seems like the teams are almost too
nice. So Alex Burrows, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. The coaches are too respectful. There's none of the back and forth in the media that's really, you know, lighting a fire under anything.
I mean, there is something to that in terms of probably drawing people in.
Well, casual fans need a hook. And I mean, if the hook... You know, the game hasn't been enough of a hook, you know, in the regular season or in other playoff series.
And the other problem here, we talk about the scoring, but also the goaltending's been really good. And so, good goaltending, I mean, for the hardcore fan, they don't mind watching a really good 2-1 game. But good goaltending keeps the scores low, and you're not, you know, in the Philly-Pittsburgh series, one of the reasons why you're having crazy games is because Brizgalov and Fleury couldn't stop anything.
And the teams hated each other. So you had a blood feud on the ice game.
This will lend credence to the argument that there should be a reseed after the Final Four. This year wouldn't have done much. But then you could possibly get two teams in the same conference who've played each other six times during the whole year, already hate each other, and then hate each other more.
Yeah. Well, what happened to the whole theme of Dustin Brown being the most hated guy in the league? You know, it disappeared after the Phoenix series.
That's right.
I never really understood that. You don't think of Dustin Brown as a...
I think the guy who draws penalties.
Yeah, you don't think of him as much of a disturber as, say, Burrows on Vancouver or some of the other guys who are really like just... Like,
you don't see him as much as Burrows in Vancouver.
Maybe.
He plays a similar type of game.
But I don't consider Dustin Brown to really be a dirty player.
He's on the edge.
Really?
Yeah.
And also by your calculation here, the Phoenix series should have drawn people in because that was pretty dirty. I mean, we had two players thrown out in the same game.
There was a lot of animosity there. Again, the problem with that series is it's simply a matter of Phoenix and Los Angeles. So I mean, you're not appealing to anybody really. Well, the games are all starting very late. There's, you know, on the East Coast, there's nobody
good
tuning
point.
In for
that's
those because you know the games aren't starting till 10 o'clock. You know, maybe 9:30 at the earliest on the East Coast. So they can't even watch the game.
And Phoenix, in terms of style of play, is the most boring team in the NHL to watch.
Phoenix is boring. I mean, but
they don't have much top end skill, and they play a really boring style, and they have a lot of veterans who play that style well. But and LA was just playing dominant hockey.
Baseball.
Baseball's up here.
You're watching baseball on the TV in the studio, and you get your head scrambled. You know, those are all valid points. How much of a blame do you think the NHL? Should hold for not really doing anything to promote any teams outside of, say, the furthest west they would ever promote a team from is Chicago. As far as terms of national broadcasts, you never see a team west of Chicago appear in a national NBC game during the regular season.
Yeah, it's rare unless it's a Hockey Day in America. Gabe can speak to this more than we can because he's in the States.
Yeah, you're in San Francisco. You know, what games do you get
usually
over there?
Usually when you get the games here on NBC, it's always Rangers, Devils, Flyers, Penguins. I mean, it's never. It really is. You don't really get to develop personalities that way.
Yeah, on the West Coast, what you get is a 10:30 a.m. Saturday Rangers game, which I don't think anybody ever watches, and you know that gets preempted by college football pretty quickly. So,
and that's the problem.
One thing NBA does really well is they develop the stars, and they give the stars attention. So you can be in Oklahoma City, you can be in Minnesota, you can be in New Orleans if you're good and you're a personality, and you can see. Granted, that game's catered more towards a superstar because there's less players, and for many reasons. But they do a good job of marketing.
Nobody cares where Kevin Durant plays. They want to watch Kevin Durant because he's that good of a player. Now, hockey, like you said, doesn't necessarily translate to that in terms of the one-on-one. Anze Kopitar, for example, doesn't always have the puck on a stick throughout the course of a game as much as the ball is in Kevin Durant's hands almost every possession. But it just seems like they continually fall down on the marketing side of things. You know, sometimes you have to market hate. You know? Yep. If the teams aren't going to do it for you, you have to market the hate. You know, there's no reason why Phoenix and LA, you know, these teams have a blood feud, and you can play that up. It's not a bad thing. It happened naturally. It's not like you're creating it.
You know? Well, I mean, I think that the NHL marketing is definitely focused on Montreal, Toronto, New York, Chicago, Boston, Detroit, whatever. But that's the limit of it.
That's
why we asked Bruce Daubing about a month ago. I said, like, why do we get so caught up in the ratings all the time when it really boils down to who's playing in the final? I mean, the ratings were the best that they were. Well, last year, partially that's due to the fact that Boston was involved. Now Vancouver surprised people in terms of how they did in the States, but. At the same time, I mean, if this was a Rangers LA final, the ratings would be through the roof. It'd be a great success, but New Jersey made it, and the ratings aren't very good. So, if it's just based on what the teams are, then how much do we really have to look into it?
That's a valid point. It just seems as again the NHL continuously, they seem to focus on it.
They do. I know. I just.
They know they're never going to be terrific unless it's, I think the Boston-Vancouver series was unique last year in that it caught the attention of people, the casual fan, because there was just such animosity towards the Vancouver Canucks. Look, the breakout star, the biggest breakout star of these playoffs has been the Los Angeles Kings Twitter account. You know, what does that say about the marketing of the NHL?
Last year,
I mean, what's captured the attention?
Well, and I mean, an unfortunate thing is if you want to get any real ratings, I think, in the U.S., you really have to market your cheap shotting. I think that's what we're coming up to here, is that, guys getting their faces smashed into the boards and drunk blood is the way to get beyond, the 5% of the market that's actually interested in watching.
Also a valid point, and there is a fine line between marketing that and sort of condoning it. And promoting it, but I mean, they seem to condone it anyways by not suspending the guys who do that for the most part. So if they're going to condone it, they might as well market it, get the best of both worlds out of it.
I mean, at the same time, too, maybe ratings bounce back. New Jersey wins tonight. We had the idea that this team that seemed unbeatable, that people were writing about the championship articles, could possibly blow the 3-0 lead. So maybe there is time to salvage these ratings.
I'll tell you what,
if they lose, if LA wins tonight, obviously it's going to be. That'd be disappointing for them.
I'll tell you what. Let's go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Game 5, which gets underway later on tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Before we get into Game 5 tonight, our boy Aaron DeGroot sent us a tweet.
Oh, boy. What's that to say, Drew?
He's got an update on the Dragon Boat race. They raced. The race just happened. They came in third out of fourth. And according to Aaron, Ezzy was a key contributor.
Well, I'll tell you the story I was telling off-air before we started. As he was telling me that they were doing their warm-up for the Dragon Boat, I guess for Dragon Boat racing, which I've never done before, you have a count. You were explaining to me, Drew, that you have a count, that you make sure everybody's in rhythm.
It's all about making sure everybody's stroking on rhythm.
So apparently, they 1, 2, 3, 4, and then apparently after a while, as he just started tossing out random numbers, and then people really got mad at him.
So
woman yelled at him, told him to stop doing that, and he said, why? He said, you're throwing us off. Who cares? He's a good teammate.
Yeah, sounds about right. Apparently, Remus has just conducted an interview with Ezzie, so there will be a full report later on in the program.
Oh, great, great,
yeah,
great.
So we'll save that for later on in the show. Let's talk about Game 5 tonight. Mm. You know, the Kings are up 3-1 now. I'm not surprised that they didn't sweep them on home ice, to be perfectly honest. I thought the Devils have too much pride to necessarily roll over, and I thought that they, you know, demonstrated that they, you know, that they were going to make it a little bit more difficult on the Kings than say Game 3, appeared to be.
Pete DeBoer is actually an interesting interview. He seems like a really bright guy, and what he says, you know, after
he's a lawyer.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. But what he said was
a lawyer by trade. Now that doesn't factor into intelligence at all.
I know.
Isn't Stu Grimson a lawyer?
Yes,
in Nashville, I believe he is. Yeah. Right. Look, Richie's here. Richie's a lawyer. We know there's no correlation whatsoever.
I can tell you exactly.
Yeah.
But no, in terms of DeBoer, but DeBoer says an interesting comment, I think after Game 4. He said, you know, aside from Game 3, he said, we've played well, we just haven't won. And the process is we haven't necessarily played our best hockey, but we haven't played that bad to be think about it. I mean, they've won one game, they've lost one game in regulation, and they've lost two overtime games. Anything can happen overtime, and Kovalchuk hits the crossbar there. So this series could very well be 2-2. It could very well be 3-1 the other way, and I think he understands that. So he didn't panic after the three games. They, you know, it obviously helps to have a veteran squad and guys who've been in that position before, and who knows right now. They're going back. LA's got to have the long haul back. They're playing at 5 o'clock today. 5 o'clock LA time today. And New Jersey, I think, maybe gets some confidence from this.
Well, I mean, I think your point is exactly right there. Overtime's a coin toss, and there's no reason to obviously afterwards we write the narrative that LA, you know, was going to win for whatever reason, but there's no reason going into overtime that you think that's anything other than a 50-50. And the most likely outcome is they split, and a less likely outcome, I guess it's the same likelihood as all other outcomes, but, you know, a less likely outcome is that Los Angeles wins both games. And then that happened, and all of a sudden the story became something exactly different. I was watching TSN this morning, and I don't remember who it was who said this, probably Ray Ferraro, but talked about how the Kings power play is not executing anymore. You know, last six power plays were poor. And I mean, honestly, six power plays is not enough time to make any kind of judgment about anybody's ability. You know, watching 12 minutes of hockey is nothing. So, you know, we've gone from, you know, essentially a 50-50 toss-up series to all of a sudden, you know, people writing about, you know, what, you know, LA is this much better, or New Jersey has this, or whatever. And they're all sort of bogus narratives, because the outcome of this series was LA as a slight favorite. But, right, you know, New Jersey winning the series is not an unlikely outcome any way.
Through the first four games now, I mean, do you think that, you know, Los Angeles has been really that dominant? Aside from Game 3.
I think they've been the better team, but not by a significant enough margin.
Taking away the score. So forget about the score for a second. You know, and I know it's hard to do that, but in terms of the control...
They've been a little bit better, but I don't think that much better. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if it were 2-2 right now. That would not surprise me at all. And if it were 3-1, I mean, again, you're in both overtime games. One shot gets through, boom. I mean, like, you know, so the Devils in the first game don't make a stupid read on the play to let Kopitar get open. And who knows what happens? So yeah, exactly. I don't think the Devils are panicking. I think another thing. I read a really interesting interview with Lou Lamoriello this week, and again, the guy doesn't panic. Been there so many times before. Understands, you know, the process. And I think they have the coaching and management of the Devils has been a big part in kind of just staying the course here. And they don't make too many panic moves. I mean, they make they put Sikora in, but they don't change four guys in their roster. They don't contemplate other changes. And I think it serves them well. So they go back now. And, I mean, obviously you can think about it game by game if you're the Devils. But all you want to do right now is you want to win and make them go all the way back to L.A. again. Watch what they have to do anyways. But all the way back to L.A. Then you go back to L.A. You're the sweetheart team. You're up 3-2. And the possibility, as mentioned earlier, of you blowing a 3-0 lead, all the pressure comes back. Who knows?
They have nothing to lose.
I mean, the Kovalchuk and Parise apparently are both injured. And that's why that would account for the fact they haven't produced offensively really in the series. But if you say basically everybody's injured, then you'd have to think that one of those two guys, you know, starts something tonight.
I think, I mean, you can see, if you watch Ilya Kovalchuk play, it looks like he's hampered. Now, I assume, you know, based on, I mean, it was the Philly series that he sat out the game because of, I think it was the hip injury, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to figure it's something in the hip or lower back area. He's got
the ankle, right?
Well, Parise's ankle after last game when he went into the boards really awkwardly there. Now, I mean, and when you lose, you know, I know the cliche is everybody's injured this time of year, suck it up and everything, but that's easier said than done. But when you're the Devils and you potentially have Kovalchuk and Parise banged up, that's really the heart of your team right there.
Yeah, I actually saw an interesting anecdote once, and who knows if this is apocryphal or not, but the first time the Oilers lost the Stanley Cup, the Islanders, Gretzky went in to, you know, congratulate them. And the Islanders were just destroyed. You know, they were covered, you know, bruises, cuts, ice packs. And Gretzky said, oh, no, we had a lot more that we could have put into this series. And he realized that they actually needed to go all out. But I don't think that's true at all anymore. You just, you know, 30 years ago, we can't draw any lessons from the way things used to work. And I think that everybody is going as hard as possible. And you have everybody injured at this point, I'm sure.
I think one thing we should talk about that is a significant change, as far as I'm concerned, is Talinder. Is it Talinder?
I believe it's Talinder, but I'll check the trusty pronunciation guide.
But his return to the lineup is something that needs to be acknowledged, because he's one of their rock solid defensemen. They signed him from Buffalo last year. This summer, he was in Buffalo last year. Him and Volchenko were the guys they were counting on to be their lockdown defensive guys. He missed the entire playoffs, comes back. He's one of their lockdown defenders, and he's an upgrade for them. And he played pretty well in game four for his first game back. That's something that we need to discuss, because, I mean, you know, obviously LA's got their lockdown guys, but That's significant for Volchenkov to have some help on the back end and allow the other guys to maybe, you know, what happens is you can play Talinder against the other teams, one of their top players. So that pushes somebody down, and he's playing a lesser role.
Talinder, maybe a smaller player.
You know, like, think Talinder's a big guy, right? But you have their smaller guys that they've been playing, the Devils, their puck movers, Zdlicky and Green, whoever it may be. You can play those guys against maybe another line that's not as good offensively, and then they can't dominate them on the board. So I think that's something that's a big help, too.
It seems like the Devils' forecheck, which was so effective against the Rangers, hasn't been as effective against the Kings. Is that a function of the size of the Kings' defensemen, largely?
That's one thing. The Kings move the puck pretty well in their own zone, and they actually do a really good job of moving the puck in front of the net, like their own net. I talked about that in the St. Louis series. They make really nice cross-ice passes. They're not afraid to move the puck cross-ice. We know the old idea is you never put the puck in front of the net, but the Kings will move the puck side to side, and they won't let you get set. And Doughty makes it look easy, obviously. But
is he playing better now than he played in 2010 at the Olympics?
I don't know about that, because the competition was better, but he's playing really well.
I don't know. I saw Dustin Brown go straight through him during the Olympics. So,
you're saying I hear what you're saying there. Okay. Well, then I mean you look at tonight, the keys to the game. Anything different than from the first four games?
Not necessarily. I mean, Drew, I guess the key for the Devils is you want to continue to improve on your forecheck, obviously. Brodeur's played great. I mean, I don't think they probably count on Brodeur playing this well. So Brodeur's played great. You want to continue to get in on the forecheck, and you want to make sure you're working those guys. And I mean, the most cliche thing, but the most true thing is the fact that they need to get a lead again.
Right.
These teams all play a different style when they're not winning, when they're not leading. So, I mean, if they can get a lead and they can make LA panic and then all that stuff, that's obviously important. But, I mean, obviously you want the lead, so it goes without saying.
So I was going to give you some odds on the game here, but unfortunately Sports Radio 1290 has blocked all the gambling sites that I use.
TSN Radio.
Yes,
TSN Radio. Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, so you won't be able to pull up the gambling site. So you'll have to get that on your BlackBerry or something.
All right, so I'm just going to call it. You know, it's a 50-50 outcome tonight, and you know that's your random number generator is going to spit out an outcome for you, and then we can write some narratives based on that and assume that it wasn't just random.
Who do you got?
Kings always, but you know I get a Stanley Cup ring either way, so I'm not really all that invested in the outcome.
Yeah, I'm sure one of those homemade cereal box Stanley Cup rings. Is that what you're getting?
We'll see. We'll see what it looks like.
Okay, sounds reasonable.
Those ring pops used to have it at Sev.
Yeah, I remember those. They make noise. Yeah, those.
Is that what Laura gave you for your wedding ring?
That's exactly what it was. It was actually just a ring. Actually, the engagement ring was just a ring pop. We used it as candy. It was quite romantic. Never said that. I'm not the last of the romantics. Let's go to break. When we come back, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald is going to join us. A good quote. A good tweet before we leave. At DSO67 wants to know, when did George Clooney join the show? Hashtag deep laid back voice. Apparently you're George Clooney now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program our good friend from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson. George, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
How's the show jumping?
We're actually just on our way out there and trying to keep tabs of the Dutch and Denmark at the Euros. So it's hopefully we'll stay on the road.
We got Denmark 1-0. It's on here in the studio. So there's your latest update.
You gotta have it on. There's no question.
Absolutely, George. We wanted to get you on with the Flames hiring of Bob Harthy in the last couple of weeks. Was this Harthy's job to lose all along, given his close ties with general manager Jay Feaster?
I think so. I think that there was. I think that he was their number one choice, and when he decided, for whatever reasons, and we sort of can't get them out of him, to choose Calgary over Montreal, because he did have conversations with Marc Bergevin, Canadiens' new GM. I just think that the familiarity, as you said, with Jay. And the fact that he was going to be able to bring Jacques Cloutier in, who's been his right-hand guy in so many places. And, I think that he was always the front runner. And, other names were thrown in there. Mike Sullivan made some sense, the assistant with the New York Rangers, and a few others. But, I think you're right. It was Bob. It was Bob all along.
George, what do you think of this hire?
Well, it's tough to tell. I mean, it's funny that these introductory press conferences, and Lord knows we've been through enough of them. Everything is sweetness and light, and everybody's happy, and everybody's telling jokes. And we were sitting there, saying to ourselves, "Geez, hasn't he looked at his roster yet?" It's tough to tell. I mean, Bob Hartley isn't going to change. I mean, Jay knows exactly what he's getting at him. He's a guy that's reputed to be really hard on young players, and trust his older players, which will be good, if, as we believe, Jerome Iginla will be a Flame in September. I think that a lot of the thinking in that was, this will be good for Jerome, this will be good for Tanguay, this will be good for Mike Camilleri, the guys that they have to have going, because it is basically, a veteran kind of a lineup, that'll help. I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, he's got a reputation as a taskmaster. He's got a reputation as a guy that holds no quarter and works his guys hard. And, we had that here. We had that. Brent was a guy that worked his players hard. Daryl, of course, worked them harder than anybody. And Jim Playfair was sort of Daryl's alter ego, so he worked them hard. Mike Keenan was a little different. Again, it comes down to the fact that this is an aging team with an aging core that's not going to get younger anytime soon, and how much he can beat out of it, I don't know.
So, George, we heard that Chris Snow had a lot of say in this decision, in this hiring. What kind of influence has he had on the organization since he joined?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
So we heard that Chris Snow had a lot of say in this hiring decision, and you're just wondering what kind of influence he's had on the organization since he joined.
Well, I think he's one of the guys. I mean, Jay's a guy who likes to have people around him who he knows, who he trusts, and it's kind of funny because there has been, as ridiculous as it sounds, a mild anti-American backlash here because everybody here is American now. Well, now we're going to have Americans and French and Clint Malarchuk. I think that he's had a certain amount of influence. There's no question Craig Conroy has. Jay trusts him. Again, it's putting people around you that you're comfortable with, and that's why Cloutier's on board. I think that's why Eric Vieux of the Shawinigan Cataracts will be the hire to replace Craig Hartsburg in the pecking order on the assistant coaching staff, because He's an old player of Bob's. Bob went to help him at the Memorial Cup when Eric asked for some help from Bob, and so they're tight. So, you know, they're kind of closing ranks here and hoping that the ties with each other will be able to get them through what is going to be, you know, a difficult period for this team, no question.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald discussing the hire of Bob Hartley as the new Flames head coach. George, a lot of the talk around Brent Sutter's departure was that he didn't want the team to sort of stay in this no man's land that they've been in for the last number of years. Yeah. You know, barely good enough to compete for the eighth spot, but not bad enough to tank all the way. You know, why is Bob Hartley going to, what about him is going to change the Flames, you know, sort of mediocre play of the last number of years?
That's a good question, and that's one that we really sort of can't answer, because when Brent went in to talk to them at the end of the season, he basically asked what direction they wanted to go in. He wanted them to be younger. He wanted them to be more new NHL friendly. He wanted them to, you know, to change things, because obviously this, after 3 years, this isn't working. Mm-hmm. And he didn't get the answers he wanted to hear. So it was a mutual parting of the ways, so to speak. What Bob Hartley does, I don't know, in the sense that you would think that when he went in to sit down with Jay that they would have talked about it, and you would think that Bob Hartley would want exactly the same thing that Brent Sutter did. So I have no idea what Jay promised him or what Jay said he was going to try to do, but it does seem fairly odd that, you know, that Bob would come in and basically take another job over this one, when he really doesn't look like this changed the outlook of this team is going to change much. I mean, Jokinen might not be back. We hear rumors that they've told him that that's not going to work out, so he may be moving on. But you got to see 12 and 34 back, and 12 and 34 were the same guys that were the cornerstone guys in 2004, and that's 8 years ago, and it's proven that it doesn't work.
George, you know, Hartley's MO for the most part in Colorado and then in Atlanta was more offensive-based coaching than defensive-based, and it seems like, you know, if you look at the roster, and you certainly know the roster is better than anyone, this roster isn't built to play that style of play. How is that going to work?
He came out, and the first thing he said, one of the first things he said at his press conference was, we want to play entertaining hockey, and, you know, after we picked ourselves up off the floor a little bit, again, you know, you wanted to know if he'd looked at the roster at all, because, I mean, yes, it's Iginla, but it's an old Iginla. Yes, it's Mike Camilleri, but it's an older Mike Camilleri. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's Tanguay, but it's an old Tanguay. I mean, they have guys, I mean, coming through that at some point are going to be, you would hope, be good offensive players, Sven Barchi and people like that. But, you know, they're a ways away. So I just don't know how you can equate it from that standpoint. I'm with you. It's a puzzler. But Hartley obviously took the job for certain reasons. And whether or not Jay has something cooking up his sleeves, I have no idea.
So is this this old team, is this a team that can actually compete from this point? Or is it just a question of when the rebuild is going to happen?
Well, we take the last 3 years in the team, it's good enough to be 5 or 6 points out of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And as you get older, that increment increases. What was 5 and 6 points is 7 and 8 points. I mean, you got to remember, last year, Iginla got 30 again. Kiprusoff had a really, really good year. For a lot of us that have been around since time immemorial, as good a year as, you know, as when he won the Vezina, if you want to look not at the numbers, but at the way he played and the quality of shots he faced and all that kind of stuff. They had some career years from some players. You know, Curtis Glencross was up there. Camilleri came in and made a difference. You know, Giordano came back and was good, and they still didn't make it. So where they think that they can pump fresh oxygen into withered, tired old lungs is really a mystery to me, and until they make some kind of moves to change the outlook of this team, you know, I mean, I think that they're just destined to be what they are, which is 10th.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald.
George, one thing you touched on earlier, and speaking to people around in Winnipeg this year, have played for Hartley, or know Bob Hartley, is how difficult and how hard he is on young players. Again, how does that, I mean, I guess it appears that, like it or not, they're going to be going with a veteran core. But even so, you always have to, especially with a salary cap, work in some young players. It just doesn't seem to make any sense.
Well, you know, we were just saying the other day, a couple of guys were talking about it. Michael Backlund's in for a hell of a rough year. You know, he's in for nine kinds of whipping. And, you know, they don't have a lot of good young players. They don't have a lot of NHL caliber players. Now, you know, Hartley got a three-year deal. Is Berchi going to be ready in 3 years? Is he going to be able to be a viable force in 3 years anyway is a better question, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense when you look at as you said, the demographics of this hockey team as opposed to what Bob Hartley's MO has been over the years. There's no question about that.
George, we'll let you go on this last question. Daryl Sutter, you know him very well, obviously. His time in Calgary. did you expect this, you know, the LA Kings one game away from the Stanley Cup, did you expect this to come about at any time in the last number of years?
Oh, no. No. You know what? The thing is, when Daryl got the job, I think those of us that, you know, had lived through it all those years, we realized he's a really good short-term motivational, you know, coach. He's going to kick Drew Doughty in his Speedo and get him up off his duff, and he's going to play better. And Richards and Carter and those guys are going to play better. From that standpoint, it didn't surprise me they made the playoffs. It didn't really surprise me that too much that they beat Vancouver. The fact that they've been able to go this deep and been this dominant up to this point, obviously, is surprising. But the thing with Daryl was, Daryl's coaching was never, ever an issue. It's when he got to be GM here that everything started to fall apart, when he kicked himself upstairs. I mean, they won a divisional title the year that he kicked himself upstairs, and they lost to Anaheim in seven games. The year before that, they'd been to the Stanley Cup final. He felt it was time just to be a GM, to move his career forward, and basically what he did was basically sign his own death warrant, because he's a way better coach than he is a general manager.
George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, thanks as always for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. Keep up with that Euro score.
Okay, it's still 1-0.
Those Dutch, what's the matter with them?
84 minutes in here.
Yeah, 84 minutes to go.
There goes my pool. I might as well just walk out now.
Thanks, George. Have yourself a good day.
Thanks, George.
All right,
hey, listen, is this Drew Doughty Speedo story a real thing, or is he?
I think it's probably just a hypothetical situation more than anything. But it could, if it's a true thing, that would be a really good thing.
Although we know Drew Doughty probably isn't somebody. If you're going to pick an NHL player to see in a Speedo, if you're into that kind of thing, Drew Doughty wouldn't be the person, apparently.
Maybe that's veteran locker room leadership at this point.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to George Johnson from the Calgary Herald for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview or any of the program at all, you can download the show in its entirety on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill. Located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne, catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Great renovations, beautiful HD big screens. They'll have the game on there later on tonight. Of course, 7 o'clock puck drop.
We're there on Thursday.
Yeah.
Dropped like 300 there on Thursday night.
Really?
So, yeah, hopefully.
Wow, you're single-handedly supporting the Cheer and Illegal Curve by proxy. That's good to hear. But, you know, great atmosphere. If you're looking for a place to watch the game tonight, the Cheer Bar and Grill should be your destination for tonight and for every night. And not so much weather proper today.
Yeah, well, you'll be inside to watch the game.
You know, yeah, but normal days when the weather's nice.
Also true.
One of the best patios in Osborne Village.
Absolutely.
As well. You can't go wrong at the Cheer Bar and Grill.
Before you transition, Drew, we should have Gabe read a tweet that Ezzy just sent in.
Sure. By all means, Gabe.
Ezzy, this is from Ezra Ginsberg, who I believe is a big fan of the show.
Yeah.
And he said, I didn't sleep in this morning, but I did just leave the race to go out for lunch at McDonald's.
Really?
So why? Let me ask you this. If he's done the race, what time is it? It's quarter to one.
Yeah.
He's done the race.
Why isn't he here?
Why isn't he here? Why is he at McDonald's?
Because he watched. Have you ever seen that old Belushi commercial for those little chocolate donuts? He wins the decathlon because they've been on his training table since he was a kid. I think it's the same kind of sentiment.
We have an answer to that. Apparently, they have another race at 2 o'clock.
Oh.
So we'll probably be able to update you on how that race happened before the end of the program.
Good, good. Okay.
Yeah. Or it's either 2 or 2:45. They're not sure.
So okay. Has he signed up for 2-a-days is what you're saying?
Pretty much,
wow.
Yes. And there's a beer tent. And he signed up for 8-a-days at the beer tent. Anyways, the Montreal Canadiens made another coaching hire today.
Uh-huh.
Or not, pardon me, not today, this week. In Michel Therrien, or Michael Therrien, depending on if he's coaching in Montreal or in Pittsburgh, apparently.
Okay.
But I guess he's back to Michel.
You know, okay, sure.
First question, you know, what do you think of the hire? And we're going to have Pat Hickey on from the Montreal Gazette coming up in about 10 minutes.
It's a weird hire. We don't really know what to make. I mean, we don't really know much about Therrien since he left Pittsburgh.
We know he's French.
Well, that's a thing. And let me just say this. I realize that the language issue is an important one, but I mean, at some point, when you get down to four candidates, you know, being Hartley and Therrien and Guy Carbonneau,
Mark Crawford,
and Patrick Roy. I don't know if Crawford was in that top four or not, but just say he's not in that top four.
He's made himself out to be in there.
Exactly. Half of the candidates have coached a team in the last 10 years. So I wrote about that on the website. Overtime they're running for. It's like the Leafs going in and considering coaches, and two of them are Pat Quinn and Paul Maurice. I mean, you just got rid of this guy like a little while ago now. But at the same time,
you still remember him.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that you've restricted your coaching search to a group that just. I think it's not beneficial for you. You want to widen the search. You want to be able to consider all coaches. So they can't take lessons and speak in the cliches that most coaches, you know, give to the media anyways.
It's true. If you hired an Anglophone coach in Montreal and you taught him about a dozen cliches, would that suffice?
Yeah, stick to the system. Make sure we're working. I mean, they obviously, you know, as you go on, you can learn the language and become, you know, better at speaking French or whatever it may be. But at the same time, I just think that the pre-qualification of being proficient in French is limited. Limited your options.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like we need to do a little analysis here and find out if you know coach vocabulary with the media is more than 250 words or not.
Yeah, because if so, I mean, you can sit down for 2 days and you'll be okay. I mean, in all seriousness, though, I mean, we don't honestly know anything about Chen. He hasn't coached since he was fired in Pittsburgh. I mean. He seems to have been fairly well received there, although obviously they fired him halfway through the season and then won the cup. It also actually he was fired and Sergei Gonchar came back at the same time, I believe. So he was missing his top offensive defenseman, and obviously they went on a run after that. And Bylsma turned out to be a good coach, but the question is, he says he's mellowed, he says he's changed, and he probably has over the years, but. I mean, he didn't seem that mellow when he was in Pittsburgh 3 years ago. So if they're banking on him to be a changed man. Seems a little bit risky.
He also didn't seem to be that great of a coach in the first place to warrant coming back for the second time to coach the greatest franchise in hockey.
I don't know. I'm not all that concerned about coaching talent, but I just think the fact that they basically decided in advance who they were willing to hire speaks poorly for the process. I like to think of it as, say, you know, you're running your Sunday night men's league team, and it's all guys you work with, and somebody's got a friend who's really good, but he doesn't work with you, and you say, nah. We don't want them because we only want guys from the office. And that's roughly what Montreal is doing. And that, hey, maybe that's the way to run your men's league team. But it's not the way to run a professional hockey team.
It's you're going to run a multi-million dollar business, a hundreds of million dollar business, based on a guy, the four guys who can speak French who are available on the market.
Well, I mean, to put a finer point on it, you're also going to pick a general manager who also previously played in the NHL and had a significant career. So it's this constant process of limiting yourself.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I was reading an old Bill Simmons article from last year around this time when it was about the NBA lockout or whatever it was. And he said, you know, when are these owners going to realize that you don't hire ex-coaches to run your organization. You hire professional business people to run your organization.
That's a point. But, you know, I made this point in the article. If Marc Bergevin is hired under those same stipulations, that you need to be able to speak French, etc., it's hard for him to be hired on that basis and then go hire a coach and not follow those same standards as the ownership probably wants. So it might be a provision of his hiring that he has to do that. And if that's the case, then you're not empowering the general manager, and doesn't he need to be able to make executive decisions like that?
I think you'd want him to.
And we haven't even brought up the fact that apparently they offered the job to Patrick Roy. The odd thing, quickly before we get into Patrick Roy, the odd thing is the Bob Hartley.
Why didn't Hartley get... Like, it seems like this everybody... Well, there was the erroneous report...
That he was going to be hired.
That he was going to be hired. But that never came to fruition.
But he didn't continue to interview with Habs, and he jumped at the Flames job. And I know Jay Feaster and him are buddies, and he's the godfather of Jay Feaster's, like, second kid. But the Flames job's a bad job.
Is the Habs job that much better?
It's a better job. I mean, they have better young prospects. They have better younger players. They have the third overall pick in the draft this year. They have Carey Price and that younger goaltender. They have P.K. Subban. I mean, the Flames don't have that. The Flames don't have the younger goaltender. And they have better young players up front. And they have the third overall pick and, I think, some cap space this year. So,
and I think $1 million a year goes further in Montreal than it does in Calgary.
It might nowadays, yeah. Especially if you can't go out because there's riots in the street every day.
But I mean, that was an odd thing about why Hartley would choose that job. And then you have Patrick Roy, they apparently, according to Al Strachan, they offered him a 2-year deal, which is kind of a slap in the face for a first-year coach.
Well, you hire a coach, you offer a coach a 2-year deal. You offer Patrick, if indeed they did offer that to Patrick Roy, and Al Strachan said it, and I have no reason not to believe Al Strachan. But if they offered Roy a two-year deal,
yeah.
They offered him that contract knowing he's going to turn it down.
So they offered him to know he's going to turn it down. So if that's the case, were they possibly on their third choice, or was it even their fourth choice? Was Joel Quenneville the first choice, and then Chicago wouldn't let him go?
Well, didn't
was Alain Vigneault the choice? So are you on your fifth choice? I mean, I don't know.
If things had gotten so bad in Chicago that Quenneville was going to be out, Bergevin would have hired him in an hour later.
Probably. That's what we've heard. I still think the Habs job's a pretty good job right now. I don't think it's a bad job. But I'm just... And Darian may fare well. It was just an odd process.
Well, they're so handcuffed by the language restriction. And I know that they...
But they do it to themselves.
Well, you say that, but, you know, do you honestly believe that they... If you hire an Anglophone coach there, and this isn't going to be a great team immediately, is already behind the eight ball so dramatically. How can he possibly be successful?
Well, I also think in Montreal, it's not clear that they know what they're doing in general. You had Perry Pern fired after 20 games because the power play was doing poorly.
Well, but we knew that the general manager at the time was Gauthier was desperate or whatever. He was trying to distract everybody from his own terrible performance.
Well, again, that's also do you want that guy running your organization if he's gonna blow up pieces of it that won't help? You know, that seems like a problem above the general manager's head in the organization.
Well, you're right. And at some point in time,
we asked last year. Why would Jeff Molson allow Gauthier to run the team and make the trades at the deadline if he was going to get rid of him anyways? It's a good question. And we don't know the answer to that. Still don't.
Mm-hmm.
So something to take into account. But it's just an odd... I mean, I don't necessarily think it'll turn out poorly, but I just think it was kind of odd the way it was handled. And then you hear about the wall leak, and I'm assuming Bergevin would have wanted his hire to be a little more smooth for the first time coaching hire. You know, there's enough pressure, and do you really want a leak like that too? And obviously, Roy leaked that to Strachan, and I'm sure Strachan probably knows Patrick Roy. But the last thing you want is to hire a coach and already know that somebody else turned down the job. Regardless of whether it's a 2-year deal or not, you know you weren't the first choice. What does that already create,
lack
of trust.
Exactly. Question from James in River Heights. He wants to know, was Scotty Bowman bilingual?
Yeah. He's from Montreal, he's bilingual.
So, I mean, yeah.
Would have been a perfect pick then.
I mean, they probably thought about it, but...
Well, there was rumors he was going to be brought in as a consultant originally, but no, that didn't happen. But yeah, Scotty Bowman is bilingual, played in Montreal, grew up in Montreal, so...
You know who else is bilingual?
You.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Were you the sixth choice? Is that what was happening?
Kevin Lowe was too.
I didn't get any calls.
No? I'm shocked.
No. It happens.
Yeah, it must have just another black mark on their reputation for hiring people, obviously.
From my perspective.
But they tried to call Eric Desjardins and they got Gabe.
Oh, that's right. It's a minor problem as usual. Anyways, why don't we go to break, and when we come back, Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio today by Richard Pollock and our good friend visiting from San Francisco, Gabe Desjardins. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program our good friend Pat Hickey. Pat, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Drew. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to hear. We haven't scared you off just yet. That's always a good sign. Pat, we obviously want to start and spend most of the time on the hiring of Michelle or Michael Therrien, depending on where he's coaching that at that time. You know, we were discussing this last segment. You know, what choice on Marc Bergevin's list was Michelle Therrien?
Well, it depends on what time you're talking. Obviously, at the end, he was the first choice. He might have been down as low as number three. But you know, there were a couple of guys who were probably on Bergevin's wish list that just never were available. I'm thinking of Alain Vigneault was one possibility. I think that he was interested in Bob Hartley. But Hartley, I think, was signed, sealed, and delivered in Calgary, you know, as soon as they got a deal done with the Zurich team. So, you know, he might have been behind those two guys at one time or another. But in the end, it came down to him and Mark Crawford. There was one report that Crawford was the leading candidate as late as Saturday. But somewhere along the line, things changed. Some suggestions, the language had something to do with it. Crawford did coach in Quebec City before, made a good effort at speaking French, but certainly not the same as having a, you know, someone whose native tongue is French and they can express himself better.
What are your thoughts on the hire, Pat?
Well, I think it's a good hire, actually. You know, I think, I mean, from a purely selfish point of view, it might be fun having Mike around. Michelle, I guess he's Michelle now again. You know, he's certainly outspoken and a, you know, fiery, passionate kind of guy. You know, I think that some of his outbursts in the past have overshadowed the fact that he's a pretty good coach. He did a good job in Granby, won a Memorial Cup there. He got to a Calder Cup final in the American Hockey League. He took a very bad Canadiens team this first time around here. Took a very bad Canadiens team to the second round of the playoffs. Now, that was a playoff series against Carolina that was, you know, the thing people remember was Therrien losing his cool and getting a bench penalty, and they went from being up 3-0 to, you know, being up 3-1. They had a penalty scored while, you know, they were serving the bench minor, and then Carolina came back to win it and won the Stanley Cup. At the same time, this is a team that wasn't very good to begin with. Their leading scorer was Yannick Perreault with 56 points. They lost Richard Zednik in the first round of the playoffs, and Sacco Koivu, who had made a dramatic return from cancer late in that season, was lost in the second round of the playoffs when he got an eye injury. So under the circumstances, he did a pretty good job. He did a good job with the Pittsburgh organization, first with Wilkes-Barre, bringing along a whole bunch of young players like Max Talbot and Chris Letang, and then, you know, taking it to the next level in Pittsburgh. There was, a 47, 48-point turnaround from the end of his, what was a half season for him, to his first full season. The next year they reached the Stanley Cup final. The third full year he was there, this team was in good shape, but they had a bit of a losing streak. Management lost patience with him, and they fired him. And, of course, Dan Bylsma took over and won the Stanley Cup that year. But, you know, as I said, I think he's done a pretty good job in the past. He's best remembered for calling out his team in Pittsburgh and the fiery outburst on the bench. But I think he's a better coach. I thought he was a good coach the first time around. I think he's a better coach now.
Pat, was there any truth, or have you heard any truth to the report that Patrick Waugh was offered the job based on a two-year contract?
You know, I know that I don't know whether he was offered the job. I know that you know, that was probably something they were talking about. From all the reports I've had, is that, you know, Waugh was not happy with the length of the contract, was not particularly happy with the money, and wasn't particularly happy with the control he'd have. And those are all, you know, factors that I don't find surprising given Patrick's ego. And again, it would have been a lot of fun to have him around here. If you know, a guy can rack up $35,000 in fines in the junior leagues, he could really do some damage in the NHL.
So, Pat, what do you do with this team? Do you blow it up, or do you just maintain the status quo?
No, I don't think you blow it up, and I don't think they're going to blow it up. I mean, there's going to be some subtle changes. Just from talking to Terry the other day, he's happy with the number one line, and that will stay intact. That's the Harney, Cole, and Pacioretty. Feels that that's a good line. He talked about Thomas Plekanec. Thomas Plekanec is his type of player, and I think he'll do everything he can to make sure that Plekanec has some decent line mates, something he didn't have last year, which accounts for, you know, drop in his production and a pretty dismal plus-minus record rating after being, double figures for most of his career. So he'll do his best to make sure that Plekanec gets get some decent line mates. Brian John will probably be one of them. They will get rid of Scott Gomez one way or another. And then they'll build with some of the young players. I mean, this is the sort of team that Therrien had in Pittsburgh in the beginning. And he doesn't have the big first-round draft choices like Malkin and Stahl and Crosby, obviously. But, you know, he's going to get, a good choice this year. In the draft, and they've got five second-round picks in the next 2 years. So, I mean, they're in this for the long haul. Whether they turn it around right away this year, I think the possibility is there. But, I think they're looking 2-3 years down the road.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette. Pat, you mentioned Therrien is probably he was famous for his outbursts both in Pittsburgh and in Montreal. Do you think that a sort of a calmer, cooler Michel Therrien can be as successful as the more fiery version that we saw the first time around?
That's a good question. I don't know. We'll see. I don't expect him to be totally cool. I think that you'll see more passion. I know one of the things that fans have been complaining about in the last couple of years with Jacques Martin is that, there seems to be no fire there on the bench. Now, that's just Martin's style, and there's a certain I'm one of the people who believe that made him a better coach, the fact that he was analytical and he was able to change and not get upset. But we're starting to go back to Guy Carbonneau now, was a similar type of player, showing a lot more emotion behind the bench. And I think in some cases, there are players who need to see that. And but I thought that Therrien was very articulate when he said that every player is different. Some guys need a kick in the pants. Some guys need to be coddled a little bit. And, I think that after 11 or 12 years of coaching at a pro level, he understands what he has to do, to get the best out of each of his players.
Pat, there's been some backlash in Montreal about the hire from some fans. Are these fans doing it to themselves in the sense that, they want a French-speaking coach, but then the Habs are limited in their search, so when they choose one of those coaches, then they complain about it? But
really... Well, I think most of the backlash has come from the English community, actually. Okay. It hasn't been that much on the Francophone community, except for those who were hoping that Patrick Roy would be the coach.
Okay, so why the backlash from the English community?
Just because they probably feel that the job should be open up to, open up to everybody, and that they're stuck with Therrien because they're stuck with they had to get a French Canadian coach.
Yeah, I mean, that seems rational to me.
It is rational. It is rational, but we're not talking about. We're not talking about rationality. We're talking about Quebec. Quebec is very distinct. It's different,
yeah.
And you have to accept that. I think it's one of those things that that makes Quebec frustrating, and at the same time, it's one of the things that makes Quebec great. The two cultures, the dual personality of the people that live here, and it has its plus and minuses. In this particular case, it might be a minus. But, the bigger challenge for them is to get more French-Canadian players. And one of the difficulties there is that the state of minor hockey in Quebec is so dismal, and they're just not producing any players.
Why is that?
I think that there's a couple of things. I think one is a lot of athletes have gravitated to football in the last couple of years. The athlete who could pick either sport, could pick any sport. And I think kids have been gravitating to football. We have great football programs here in the province. I think one of the things is they cull the kids out too quickly in the minor ranks. kids are going to major junior when they're 16 years old on a regular basis, and they're just not giving a lot of these kids time to get developed, and some kids drop by the wayside, and the numbers just aren't there.
So, Pat, in a different direction here, what do you think about Bergevin's philosophy as a general manager? Is he bringing some secret sauce from Chicago?
Well, I think what he's done is that, you know, a big major difference between Bergevin and Pierre Gauthier is that Bergevin seems to understand that he can't do it all by himself. Mm-hmm. And, it's been a breath of fresh air being able to talk to the assistant general managers and the director of scouting and before everything went through Pierre Gauthier. He was the only one who was allowed to talk for the organization with the exception of the head coach. And now we're starting to see a more open approach. I think, for starters, that's good. I think he surrounded himself by really good people. I mean, Rick Dudley's a great assessor of talent. Scott Mellenby, I think, is going to be very good. I know less about him than the others. I know him as a player, and I know him personally, but I don't know much about him as a potential as far as, bringing players, assessing players, developing talent. Looks like Martin Lapointe is going to be joining the team, another good hire. And, of course, with Dudley and Lapointe, you both have a Chicago connection there. So, I think that he's doing the right things. I think that he's strong enough to admit that when he doesn't know something and areas where he needs help, and he's going to go out and get it.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette. Pat, when Therrien was announced as the head coach earlier this week, it also was revealed that the two Randys, Cunnyworth and Latissure, were not going to return to the organization. Did they have any chance of staying on as assistant coaches, or was the writing on the wall as soon as Therrien was hired?
Well, I think as soon as the season ended, I thought that they were gone. I mean, when Bergevin took over, he did say that he had told Randy Cunnyworth there would be a spot for him in the organization as an assistant coach, providing the head coach, and that's just normal. I mean, mm-hmm. Head coaches tend to want their own assistants. They've got to live with these guys and work with them, and you want guys you feel comfortable with. I feel sorry for both of them because they did a really good job the one year they were in Hamilton. You could argue that they did a better job than Guy Boucher did the year before. And, everybody was going wow over Boucher and Marty Raymond, the job they did in Hamilton. But Cunnyworth and Latissure got the most out of a team that wasn't quite as good. They helped in the development of Dehaene and Pacioretty. And it's unfortunate there isn't a spot for them in the organization. I mean, the good news, they're still being paid for another year. They've got five or six people who are still being paid for another year, including Gauthier and Bob Gainey and Jacques Martin, the former coach. But, it's unfortunate. And I thought that, the French press handled their departure with not a lot of class. I mean, and Randy handled the job, a very difficult job, with a lot of class and a lot of dignity, and he deserved better than that, than a cover or photo with, bye bye Randy on it. And it's, as I said, it's unfortunate, but these are things that happen when regimes change.
Yeah, that's brutal. Pat, has there been any speculation as to who Therrien will bring in as his assistants?
There's been all sorts of speculation. Larry Robinson, who has been offered positions or he's talked to the team in the past, is a possibility. There's a good chance he won't be retained in New Jersey, and he might be interested in a job up here. We know that Guy Lapointe has said that he's not interested. Eric Desjardins said he wasn't interested. Guy Carboneau's name has been floated around. Whether he would come back and accept an assistant job after being the head coach here, I don't know. But if he wants to get back into hockey again, mm-hmm. I think he has to take a job. But I don't know whether Montreal would be the best fit for him in that situation. There have been a few other Patrice Brisebois' name has been floating around. Although I think they have more of they're thinking more of him as a scout in Quebec. So But we'll see in the next couple of weeks where they go.
Pat, we'll let you go on this one last question. We can't have you on without asking you about your colleague Red Fisher, who announced his retirement yesterday. It was announced. Can you talk about, for those of us in Winnipeg who might not fully understand, the impact that Red Fisher had on the game of hockey in Quebec and Montreal?
Yeah, actually, when Red told me a week ago he was leaving, he promised that he made me promise I wouldn't talk about him. But I assume that since this is in Winnipeg, he won't hear about this. But Red and I worked together off and on since 1965 at the Montreal Star. He was my mentor, my teacher, my colleague, my good friend. And, for years he was just a fixture here. He won 3 National Newspaper Awards. And, you don't find a better student of the game and someone who can write about the game and then explain it as well as Red did. And he could be crusty at times, but deep down inside, just a really, really good man who loved hockey, he loved journalism, and he'll be missed. At least I'll miss him.
Pat, we'll let you go on that note. That was great. Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette, thanks always for your time, for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
As I said, anytime, guys.
Take care, Pat. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our good friend Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette for joining us. Earlier, we were joined by George Johnson from the Calgary Herald. In case you missed either of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Still to come on the program, Martin Cash from the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us at the top of next hour. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important decisions you will have to make in life. It also can be one of the most stressful. Let David Carr take care of your stress. He makes it a stress-free proposition for you. He handles things from start to finish and all of your real estate needs. Get in touch with David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Now, Richie, you've just taken possession of your new place that you acquired with the help of David. How's that going?
Amazing.
Cable guy came today?
Cable guy came today. We had a good talk.
Yeah, good talk with the cable guy.
He needs to come back, though, because I got one of those portals, and so you need to have a reinstallation. But I got the phone running. I have the cable. I could go online now.
Do you have a couch?
It's not there yet, so I had to stand the whole time. But I was able to go online, so I could go to drewmandel.com and just read about how important you are.
That's true. It's true. It's a good website, drewmail.com.
I haven't seen that site. What's there?
Well, it's Drew posing.
It's just pictures of myself.
Yeah, he's just in boxers. Yeah. He's just grabbing things.
I'm going to go there right now.
I'm lying on a bearskin rug, like posing as George Costanza when Kramer takes the pictures.
So that's what I was picturing.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's a great website whatsoever. Anyways, David Carr, Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Now, I'm Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock, and our good friend Gabe Desjardins is joining us fresh from his usual exploits in San Francisco. He's returned home to Winnipeg. Gabe, one of the things you said in a sort of our pre-show meeting is worth talking about is, that the free talent market in hockey basically doesn't exist. Is that a fair comment?
Well, I wouldn't say that it doesn't exist, but the free talent market...
Which is another word for, say, free agency.
Yeah. So, in baseball, there definitely was a free talent market, say, 20 years ago. There were all kinds of players who had, Bill James could, I think 1 year put together a team on paper that would win 75 games and would get paid, $1 million total. And there were guys with talents that were unrecognized. And that has changed in baseball. The free talent market has all but disappeared. Hockey had a little bit better, I think, analysis of players within the teams. There's a little bit better assessment of talent. And so there's never been a huge free talent market out there, but there still is. There still are a few things.
But you say that, yet that there hasn't been a huge... But yet on July 1st, we're going to have a special edition of this program, and then we're going to be on talking about the free agency market. So if there's not this free talent market, or if it doesn't truly exist to a great deal, why do general managers in the NHL and fans pay so much attention to what happens on Canada Day every year?
Well, the thing is that you still are building your team. You need to buy guys at market rate. And add them to your team if you want to have enough wins to be competitive. That's a key piece for free agency. You know, the idea that there's some guy available out there for the NHL minimum who's going to add significant wins to your team, that's a place that isn't necessarily true.
Like the likely scenario on July 1st, and Gabe can touch on this, is probably that you'll buy a guy at market rate, or more likely even over market rate. The very few good buys on July 1st, I'd assume.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Florida did last year. I think they picked up six guys in free agency almost immediately, and they overpaid for every single one of them. And, you know, wins go for about $3 million each in the free agent market, and Florida paid $4 million a win last year.
Explain that.
So, basically, you can look at how many, it's a little bit of a kludge, but you can look at our friend Tom Awad has put together this system called GVT, and it basically assesses how many goals a player is worth. And a lot of the ratings for individual players, I think, can be knocked a little. But when you take a large number of players, say every single player who's available in free agency, you can look at how many wins they put up. How many goals they put up, and then you divide by six to get wins. So you can see how many wins they put up, and you can see how much money they got paid over the minimum. And it's a relatively simple analysis there. It's just the number of dollars per win across the entire group of free agents.
So most people, these advanced analytics, most people know them best from Moneyball, the movie. Or the book, if they read the book. So this is just the hockey version of
just
that
the
sort
hockey
of analysis?
Version. Yeah, I mean, we stole everything from baseball for this particular concept. This has been done in baseball for years where, people go and they have a better way of assessing player value than...
On FanGraphs now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you go and look on FanGraphs, you say, how many wins was this guy worth? And then, you look at how much he was paid. And FanGraphs for every single player shows both his price and his value. And so you can see, if a contract was worthwhile over the last 3, 4, or 5 years, however much you want to look at.
So how often in the free agency world are contracts worth their purchase price?
Well, the problem that you have here is that players who are pre-UFA cost significantly less. Players on entry-level contracts cost, around $1 million a win if you can find a player who's worth anything on an ELC. Players who are RFAs costs, depending on their status, between $1.5 and $2.5 million a win. And then players in free agency average $3 million a win. So if you're building your team, if you went out and you bought only free agents, you're not going to be that competitive. You need a mix and you need more younger players. And, obviously the window is very short with younger players now compared to how it was before the lockout.
Younger players because you control their movement.
Yeah, you control their movement. You control their costs.
Right.
When you look at a guy like Drew Doughty was the biggest bargain in the entire league for several years. Drew Doughty's not that much of a bargain anymore.
Because he got paid.
Exactly. Yeah. The second you start paying a player, he becomes not necessarily, completely valueless to you, but his value is much less significant. Now, Doughty is such a good player that you could never even pay him as much as he was worth under the present rules, so there's still some value there. But when Drew Doughty was making, $2.5 million, including his bonus.
Bonuses, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Kings were getting, $8 million a year in win value from the guy.
You mentioned that you shouldn't.
Duncan Keith before he signed his big deal. He was playing at a high level, and they were in Chicago when they won the cup, and they had a bunch of guys who were playing at a way above their actual market value.
Yeah, and we understand this, right? We know this is why it was such a bad idea for Dale Tallon to throw all his contracts in the mail instead of FedExing them, right? He cost the team $5-6 million, and that's two wins.
I'll tell you what, I want to go to break, but when we come back, I want to talk about goaltending and why it's not worth paying for goaltenders. Is that a fair statement?
It's a good tease, Drew.
Okay. Very, very fair statement.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about goaltending. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.